Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Welcome to Local Food Connections. This morning, a show about the power of locally grown food to connect us more strongly with our communities and the lands we inhabit. This show promotes sustainable food systems that foster community resilience and empower individuals to make choices for themselves, their communities, and their environments. Local Food Connections is brought to you by Local Food Connect. We're broadcasting from Wurundjeri country and pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. We respect the enduring strength of First Nations people and acknowledge their long heritage of agriculture and care for the land on which we live. On this week's show, I'm pleased to be joined by Katie Swain and Jesse Winter. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Katie describes herself as a penniless economist, an inactive activist, bit of an ironist, I think, yeah. And a kindly old maiden aunt to any nice person who wants one. But I know her from when we met in a 3CR training day, and that's when I found out that Katie has an interest in the economics of sustainability, hence her guest appearance on this show. Jesse, I've just met today. Jesse has a master's in economic sustainability, is interested in modern monetary theory, but we won't go into that today. But if you are interested, you can go over to the 3CR show Radio MMT and have a look at what that's all about. So Jesse has a qualification in modern monetary theory. Is that the right way to put it?
Yes. Yeah.
She's also shopped in the odd supermarket, and she's even worked in Coles and Woolies. So they have both come in today to talk or to tell us what they know about the power of the two major supermarkets in this country and the impact of that power on growers and suppliers. Now, that Radio MMT show is all about this progressive approach to economic theory called modern monetary theory. And Katie's been over there joining Kevin to talk about topics such as how banks steal from the poor and give to the rich.
Yes.
What money actually is, which is a very interesting topic, and why people don't understand modern monetary theory. But we're not going to go there today. We're just going to launch into what's up with the supermarkets. So give me eye contact, the first person who wants to talk about what's up with the supermarkets. Someone's covering their eyes. It's you, Katie.
Well, a lot. But, I mean, what's happening basically is what's happening in many industries, which is the industries have become much more consolidated by virtue of the fact that simply in a modern economy you have much more complex products being produced with longer supply chains and more convoluted distribution networks and so on and so forth. So, you know, there are very, very big returns to economies of scale and very, very large disincentives to new players entering a market where the costs of getting established are just so high.
And that includes the kind of new players that we often have on this show, which are people trying to do, you know, small-scale market gardens or community-supported agriculture, things like that. They haven't got much of a chance. So we need to explore that a bit. Have you got anything to add to that, Jesse?
Yeah, I think the really interesting one I found was looking at even independent things like IGA. Like, they still necessarily have the huge supply chains. They all work with a single huge supplier and they all work together, and then they're only independent insofar as, you know, sort of on paper, and actually it's all sort of the same huge scale thing that is the same for Coles and Woolworths and Aldi and anyone else.
So if you're in the system, you're by definition not independent because you can't survive in the system and be independent very easily. So just to dial right back a bit, Katie, for people that might not know, can you just explain what we mean by a supply chain and what distribution involves?
Okay, so, well, in the case of supermarkets, you have growers, which is what we're concerned about here. Mm-hmm. Very possibly you might have one or two levels of wholesalers in between the growers or the supermarkets. Larger growers, the supermarkets will deal with directly. But from there, you have the growers have to deal with the supermarket's distribution network, which is increasingly centralised around the major capital cities.
So we're talking warehouses, trucks?
Warehouses, trucks, that sort of thing.
Yep.
And the ramifications of that sort of centralisation of distribution are quite interesting.
Can we just think about that a little bit? Just, Jesse, what are the ramifications of that? So we're talking about a farmer produces the crop. The crop gets processed often in some way, ends up in a warehouse via a truck, ends up in the supermarket via another truck. What are the ramifications of this?
I think the interesting thing is when you look at that process, and then occasionally there'll be something like all the dairy farmers in a region they'll sort of the costs will get cut at the supermarket level, and then they'll pass that on to the wholesaler or the processor, and then the processor will pass that on to the dairy farmers, and then at some point they might get squeezed so much that they'll say, why are we selling to this wholesaler? Maybe I'll try and do the processing myself. I specifically mentioned dairy. There was a case with Coles, where dairy farmers tried to do that, and then discovered, oh, this is quite expensive, actually.
The processing of the milk.
Yeah. So when the supermarkets say, oh, we're going to drop the price of milk 20 cents, and then that sort of gets passed down the chain until the dairy farmers at the end are sort of, well, we need to try and squeeze our own profits out of this here, and how do we do that? They don't, effectively.
Yeah. So the moral of that story is that when the costs get pushed back down the supply chain, it's the farmer at the end who's going to suffer. And just to stick on the dairy industry a bit, I talked to a dairy farmer who told me that those big tankers of milk, they're worth like $50,000. That's a lot of processing. So that's that pasteurising and all that stuff that needs to be done. So how a farmer could possibly afford all of that, plus the whole big truck and all the health regulations around it and stuff.
I mean, back in the day, of course, we had things like agricultural cooperatives, especially dairy cooperatives, and things like state-based marketing boards, which gave small producers the ability to get some of those economies of scale that allowed them to be autonomous within the management of their own business, but have some bargaining power against the buyers.
Yep.
But famously, no less a saint of competitiveness, as Alan Fells said, no, we can't have this. This is an anti-competitive, anti-market situation. This is going to lead to less efficient outcomes. But of course,
the irony of that is,
well, is that we have all these primary producers who are so tightly squeezed by supermarkets that they can't invest in their own firms. So they are just, you know, scrabbling to get by year to year. They're not making long-term investments, which means that their firms are probably much less efficient than they could be.
Mm-hmm. Anything to comment on that, Jess, before?
No, that's pretty much it. Is they just they can't invest, they can't grow, they can't improve. They can barely even survive if they do at all.
So, I've done a little bit of reading about this just in preparation for this, and I know that in that with that $1 milk campaign that the supermarkets had, that did actually result in dairy farmers going out of business. And then the astounding thing to me is that we now a net importer of butter. That's just emblematic of what's up with the whole system, isn't it? Mm. Butter coming in on big tankers, and when we can make it here.
Yeah. just on the import export stuff, like I believe Australia overall is a massive agricultural exporter.
Mm-hmm.
Vast majority of our stuff is exported. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine there'd be some boring trade stuff about like we export a lot of butter and maybe we import a lot of butter as well for stupid trade reasons. I don't, whatever. That's not interesting. But there is, I mean, the thing with that is we'll have agricultural land and we'll say, okay, we've squeezed this dairy farmer out and okay, maybe we'll sell that land to a different conglomerate farmer. Maybe they'll keep it as dairy land. Maybe it's not, maybe it's more suitable for some other crop. And then, you know, it will consolidate all of our agricultural output into whatever is the most profitable thing, regardless of whether that's actually the thing we need, because we can export so much of it.
Somewhere in the world will buy it,
yeah,
and that's all that matters. Yeah, so we are a big exporter of food. I think we export third of all the food we grow, or even two-thirds, it's a lot.
Yeah, and where the squeeze is felt most desperately is in those fresh produce producers who have very short expiration times on their food.
Yep.
So, I mean, you can quite easily buy Australian beef in Japan, and in fact cheaper than you can buy it in Australia, but you can't... People who are producing, say, leafy greens, they mm-hmm. have a very small window of opportunity between mm-hmm. harvest and delivery,
mm-hmm.
Which means when the supermarkets say, you know, all that produce we expected to purchase this week, actually we're only going to purchase half as much.
Mm-hmm.
They then have the problem of what the hell am I going to do with it? And exports are not an option.
No, you can't export lettuce. Right, so that gets down to the next way that supermarkets have got far too much power over farmers, right? They can just say, we did say ask you to grow apples. However, and what might they say about the apples one season, Jesse?
Yeah, apart from the farmers are stuck with, you know, stuff like apples, that'd be very like seasonal things. They'll be stuck with whatever, they might have climate impacts, and then they'll go to the supermarkets and say, "Oh, we had a smaller crop than we expected last year," and the supermarkets will go, "Okay, well, we'll go to the next guy." and they're just what are they going to do? They've got nowhere else to go. They're really just at the mercy of whatever the supermarkets are deciding they want to do this week.
Mm-hmm. And just tease out the implications of that a bit. What then happens to that food?
Yeah, well, I mean, this comes back to the question of efficiency. What's efficient for the supermarket is actually very inefficient for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of the testimony to the various inquiries that were run over the course of 2024 and 5 said, look, we frequently just get... We get forecasts from the supermarkets of how much they're expecting to purchase periodically, but in any one week it could be half of what the forecast.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, the supermarkets are at liberty to reject what's delivered based on quality.
Yeah,
their assessment of quality.
Their idea of what quality is.
And a lot of the problem is that. As well as the fact that the food is becoming less and less saleable by the day, the producer then has to bear either the cost of freight to get it back from the Coles distribution centre, which could be very, very centralised.
Oh, hang on. So the farmer's already sent all this to the distribution centre, and then Coles might say, oh, too much, sorry.
Yeah, I was reading some of the testament, the submissions to these inquiries just recently in anticipation of this, and yeah, like the thing, the shipment can be accepted by Coles or Woolies at the distribution centre. They take a look at it and say, sorry, this doesn't meet our quality standards, and the supplier then has the option of either paying for the freight to try and get it back and get it to some other buyer, possibly dump it on the wholesale market, which is a further problem because the supermarkets set their prices based on wholesale market prices. So if suddenly there's a huge amount of your produce turning up on the wholesale market next week, you're not going to get a lot of money for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a problem. One option is to donate it to charity. The problem is that Coles has accepted this produce. If the supplier agrees to this and doesn't want to come and pick it up, Coles will donate it and take credit for the donation.
No, to take all the kudos.
When you hear the supermarkets talking about how good they are at donating food to charity, that's price that's been borne by the producers.
Yeah, I never really knew the details of that, but I know that I've been driving along and seen a Coles thing, and it's got fair share. We support fair share or something, and I thought, I think that would probably benefit from a little bit of investigation.
Yes. Oh, I should preface that with the word allegedly.
They do that at both ends, though, because they have the, do you want to round up your purchase to the nearest dollar and we'll donate that to.
Yeah.
And then, so they get a tax break from donating that to charity, but we paid it.
Yeah, and everyone feels very virtuous and remains ignorant.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have a little break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, the voice of the community.
3CR, community radio, giving the voice to the community since 1976.
I want to drop food, not bombs. Hot trains, bottles, give it every info shop. I want to give free therapy out in the park. Go to free school, just clap, crack, rock, drop food, not bombs.
When I was new to Melbourne, I found a Food Not Bombs flyer on the road, and I had like this fist with a carrot, and carrots are my favourite vegetable. Yeah, I think they were asking for help doing stuff, and I got in touch.
We, I guess, rescue food
that would otherwise go to waste.
I like the aspect of sharing food and not making anyone feel obligated to pay anything for it.
We make a real point at Food Not Bombs of involving everyone who wants to be involved in whichever part they want to be involved in.
For more information, go to fnbmelb.noblogs.org. Food Not Bombs is a 3CR supporter.
This is the Local Food Connection Show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. You can also visit the 3CR website and listen to the live streaming of the show. And you can go to 3CR Local Food Connections and listen to all of our podcasts. Today I'm chatting with Katie Swain and Jesse Winter about the power of supermarkets to basically dictate the workings of the whole food system and also to dictate prices to farmers and often make it completely unviable for farmers to operate. And we know about the mental health side of that too, which is not really what we're talking about today. But today I thought we might start talking a little bit about the consumer. And Jesse, since you've had all this experience working on the floor of the supermarkets,
sure,
please tell us what kind of skullduggery they get up to.
I think the I'm going to say the worst one. There's a lot of bad ones, depending on how you look at it. Woolworths have recently got in trouble for this, and Coles definitely did it previously, which is they'll say, oh, we're doing this massive discount, and we're locking in these low, low prices. And then when you look into it, like the price is sometimes even multiple times what it was before. But they briefly, I think it was something like 30 days, they'll raise the price to some ridiculous level and then say, oh, we're giving you 50% off now. Because if 50% of some price that we had it at for 30 days and you didn't even notice, and now it's more than it was before that, but it's less than it was for this arbitrary period. And like, technically, they're like within the rules, but they're being deceptive to the consumer. They're raising prices under the guise of discounting prices.
Yeah. So you think you're getting I'm going to rush into Coles because I saw the ad. They've taken 50% off everything, but you don't realise they put 150% on it.
Yeah.
The week before. That's shock. But is that within the rules? Isn't that what they went to? Isn't that what they got taken to the ACCC about?
There's nothing in Australian law that regulates pricing.
Right, okay, free market. Firms
are all free to set whatever prices they want.
And let the buyer beware.
The idea is that market discipline is supposed to keep the firms in line. But the thing is, the firms all play by the same rules. There's no sane reason to indulge in a price war because it's just cutting everybody's throats.
Yeah.
So they know not to do it.
And it's not exactly a free market anyway, with only two major players and Aldi, a sort of a semi-major player.
Yeah, well, the hope of the regulators is that somehow, magically, additional competitors will emerge. But this is not, A, not likely, and B, if and when it happens, why do you expect that the additional players will not play by the same rules as everybody else?
Well, it's going to be a strong incentive, isn't there, if you can hop onto a supply chain that's already there or use their trucks or whatever.
That's one of the reasons why it's so hard for additional competitors to come in. Mm. I mean, Aldi took over 20 years to get less than 10% of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And that 10% of the market was actually taken from the smaller independents because over the same time, both Coles and Woolworths gained market share.
They gained market share at the same time by the means we've been talking about before?
The fact that getting by as a small independent is so hard. And from the point of view of, as Jesse said, that there's one wholesaler underlying almost all of these small independents, and it's that wholesaler that determines whether a particular outlet is viable or not, really.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about little grocery shops, little veggie shops, fruit and veg shops, as well as the minor supermarkets.
Yes, well, I mean, another thing is what has happened to the small fruit and veg shops. They have pretty much disappeared and been replaced by the major supermarkets.
Mm. Mm.
I think we were talking about the low pricing, and they actually can set low pricing. That's genuinely a huge discount on the cost of the product, and they will do that in areas where they've got not quite yet got a monopoly on grocery shopping in that area. So they'll drop the prices to squeeze out the competition.
Okay, so they've just set up in a new. They've got a new lease and a new shopping centre.
Yeah,
and they need to get the people loyalty. Yep.
Yeah, so they can just keep the prices low because they can. They have the margins to take the hit, and the smaller competitors don't have that. So they're going to fail sooner or later.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons for Aldi's very, very cagey approach to competing with the majors. They don't want to tread on their toes because they know that Coles and Woolworths have deeper pockets than them.
Mm-hmm. Do you know about how that looks? I mean, how do they manage not to tread on their toes? What's the uneasy relationship there?
Aldi only carries about a tenth of the range of the number of discrete products that the major ones carry. They don't have their own in-house services like home delivery or marketing or
even giving you a bag, packing your thing for you stuff.
Yeah. So it's basically a different kind of service they're offering.
Mm-hmm.
And they are competing quite aggressively, but for the kinds of customers that the majors don't really value.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. What about the impact on the cost of living, or is it? How does the cost of living work with all this cost of living problem at the moment?
Well, so that thing that I just mentioned, that they'll just squeeze out the competition, and then in that area, they then have a monopoly, and they can jack the prices up to way higher than they were before. And I think where I live in Chadstone, I'm actually not sure if this is still the case, but for a while it was technically a food desert because there was one supermarket in walking distance, and actually it was up quite a steep hill, so it was for some people you just can't really get there, and that's your only choice. And otherwise there's there's a milk bar, you can get maybe bread and milk and not much else.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's quite comical reading some of the testimony given by the Coles and Woolworths executives to these inquiries that a year or two ago. When asked, don't Coles and Woolworths make rather large profit margins for this sort of product? The Coles CEO responded, well, actually, yes, we are, you know, a seller of non-discretionary goods. People can't not eat.
Yeah.
But that's precisely the reason why we need to make such good profit margins, because when times are tough, people depend on us to do our jobs and deliver the things they need, which is sort of comical. It's like much of this testimony is fantastic. It's like an episode of Yes Minister. It's really amusing.
Just say any old shit.
Yeah.
And this cost of living, that's and the monopoly, that's what you see in the regional areas, isn't it? So it's the Aboriginal community's way out.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about the...
Yeah, they're even more so in terms of, like, food deserts. They've got one choice. They've got one supermarket they can get to, if at all. And they can... they've just got no options. I mean, there's nothing in terms of... The Coles and Woolworths will set the prices to make a profit and hope you can pay that, because otherwise you're not getting it. I mean, they don't really care about the community. Yeah. They care about making a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And the ABC did a story recently that this problem is getting worse. And the irony is that many of the places that are underserved by the supermarkets are actually the places that produce the food. But because they're all tied into these highly centralised distribution centre systems, the food goes first to a capital city, to a distribution centre there.
So you can stand in your town and watch all the food just getting driven
just
out.
And then get delivered back 3 days later when it's virtually past its shelf life, and pay through the nose for it.
Yeah.
And the problem is getting worse, because certainly Coles is working hard to centralise its distribution network further. So they've set up like 3 automated distribution centres in Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria recently, which basically cover the whole eastern seaboard, and each replace anywhere up to half a dozen smaller distribution centres. So these networks are getting more and more centralised and concentrated.
And just to wind up the show, really, we're getting to the end now. I mean, I can't help thinking, well, then you've got you need oil, a lot of oil, and that's not a problem, because you can just have a war or something to get the oil.
Yeah.
So it's really mental, isn't it? So can you just, since you're into the economics of sustainability, can you just give us your own final comments on the unsustainable nature of the food system, if you have any? Sorry to put you on the spot.
Well, this system is very fragile. It's liable to disruption in all sorts of ways, and none of the supermarkets are going to do anything about it, because their time horizons are something like 6 to 12 months. They're not going to make long-term investments to make the system more robust. Indeed, they're going to say, well, okay, if we can't source butter cheaply enough in Australia, we'll get it from New Zealand and make the system even less resilient to disruptions like we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're large investment companies, effectively. So they report quarterly profits, and so they operate on that basis. They think in terms of quarterly profits, and they short do not term. Think in terms of how are we going to produce this much food output in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on their mind.
No. Okay, we've got to go. Thank you for coming in. We've got to the end of the show. You've been listening to Local Food Connections on 3CR, and today we've been speaking with Katie Swain and Jessie Winter about the food system, basically. Until next week, love the land you're on. Share your surplus. Take care of each other. Remember, if you want to support independent media, you can become a 3CR subscriber. Stay tuned now to 3CR for more radical radio with Latin American Update. Bye for now.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.